Chapter 5, The Ethical Dynamics of the Human Person. 5.1, Ethical Perception. Given that people's ethical foundation lies in their capacity to understand, in their comprehension of reality and adaptation to it, it is important to study the nature of their ethical knowledge. In the first place, we can speak of ethical perception, i.e., of moral good as it should be carried out, which is often more of an intuition than rational knowledge. People are beings that, before knowing and reacting ethically, have ethical intuitions, which drive and guide their reflections. To distinguish this from other faculties, we could call it an ethical or pre-ethical instinct, which is exclusive to human beings. It is an expression of people's innate inclination to what is right. We usually first perceive the values that are at stake in ethical issues. Then we think of different alternatives for solving the problem. People are capable of understanding what actions and behavior, what life projects might be more reasonable, more in line with concrete human beings. People need to be educated and to develop by learning about the values that lead to their fulfillment as human persons and by putting them into practice. These values include loyalty, responsibility, sincerity, justice, etc. 5.2, consciousness. Consciousness is the faculty by which people are the masters of themselves and possess themselves. Consciousness is not an entity that is separate from the subject. It is the subject inasmuch as he knows himself, values himself, and judges himself. Consciousness consists of being able to know oneself and to turn back on oneself. The ethical conscience consists of the ability to evaluate and judge the projects, attitudes, and actions that people carry out. It is characterized by its reference to ethical values, such as right and wrong, justice and injustice, truth and falsehood, reasonableness and unreasonableness, the individual and others. Consciousness encompasses all of the dimensions of the human person and constitutes her unity. It is the ultimate foundation of the person. 5.21, the ethical judgment of conscience. People are inclined to make ideas out of reality, and reality out of ideas. This is the natural dynamic of rational beings, to want to understand, interpret, and affirm reality. All people display the tendency to apprehend reality and to act as closely as possible in accordance with it. Reality apprehended, understood, and assessed becomes the measure and norm of action. People apply ethical principles on the basis of their ideas, their realities or needs, and their culture. This horizon is historical. Thus, not all people consider the same things as mandated or forbidden. 5.2.2, the dialectic of conscience. In her acts of conscience, the human person experiences herself as identical to herself, and yet she feels the demands of her conscience as intensely as if they were separate from her. This gives rise to tension. The conscience reveals to people who they are, what they have achieved, and what they have left to achieve. It expresses the tension between what people are and what they ought to be, between being and the way of being. The conscience is the wellspring of responsibility, and as it is often experienced as a call from outside of ourselves or as a reproach, it easily becomes personified or identified with a higher power. The perception of conscience enables people to realize that they can transcend themselves, that their self is reality and project, that reality and practice can correct their judgments, and that the contradiction that occurs inside of them can be overcome in the process of their decisions. People experience their conscience dynamically because it reveals to them their identity. They are what they are such and unique. But then they transcend themselves by realizing that the more they identify with good, with truth, and with others, the more themselves they are. 5.2.3, function of conscience. People as conscious beings have a perception of reality and its value. They affirm the value and link it with their action, while at the same time rejecting the anti-value. Thus, for example, by collaborating in a common task, they affirm and take possession of the values of collaboration and solidarity, preferring them to indolence and selfishness. From the conscience and from the perception of reality, obligation arises, which is an ethical imperative. People do not create values, they discover them, nor do they discover their obligations, they encounter them and become aware of them. Duty arises from the perception of reality and from what people wish would come to pass. It arises from being and from the ought to be. Duty is the expression of the inner tension between being and its aspirations and possibilities. As conscious beings, people judge their acts. This function of the conscience has been visualized with different elements of a trial, the witness, the accuser, the judge, guilt, the law, the executioner, the sentence, etc. The judgment handed down by the conscience can be an affirmation, or it can be a disapproval and condemnation. 5.24, the formation of the conscience. The ethical dynamism of the conscience calls for a sort of trial to be held, but it also calls for its own continual formation. Because people never have absolute awareness of all the facts, nor can they foresee all the circumstances and consequences, they must always be open to more and better knowledge of the path that leads them to be more fully human. This view of the conscience that is always open and critical gives compelling expression to the tension between the objective and subjective dimensions of ethics. Negligence or indifference to the continual formation of the conscience creates an unsound and guilty conscience by staking out a position without considering a commitment to the truth. The guilt does not lie in following the conscience sincerely, but in the previous negligence, when the person could have developed a more solid and better grounded knowledge. Decisions of conscience do not exclude the possibility of error. This is a risk inherent to all human options that arises the moment people are presented with different alternatives without knowing which one is the most appropriate. Nor does the simple fulfillment of the law preclude all danger. It would be naive to think that submitting to orders eliminates all risk of mistake. It is sometimes said that he who obeys makes no mistake, but that is not the case. He who obeys an unjust order commits an injustice along with the person who gave the order, although perhaps with a lesser degree of responsibility, because he is not a mechanical instrument. Obeying does not do away with his identity as an ethical subject, a person. If obedience confers peace of mind, the question should be posed whether this peace of mind is authentic or the fruit of an escapist acquiescence that seeks to shirk responsibility. People often try to flee from the risk of decision and responsibility. When the person in charge takes on these risks and responsibilities and takes them away from those who obey, she stunts their growth and human development more than she does them any favor. Without the clear and responsible participation of the conscience, there is no truly ethical attitude. Thus, obedience to law and authority, without looking at the law or authority that is behind it, it is not a positive ethical attitude. Obligation derives from the conscience when the conscience has discerned what is best or what should not be done in the context of the circumstances. 5.2.5, ethical conscience as the ultimate criterion for action. Through their perception of reality, subjects are linked to the values that are implicit in reality. Their conscience becomes the norm to which they should submit. It is the ultimate ethical occasion by which people are linked to their actions. The conscience is nourished by education and the influence of the environment. People usually become aware of what is and what should be done on the basis of what they have been told, but their observation of what others do or should do also shapes their conscience. We are dealing with a norm that is internalized on the basis of the reality of things, of the environment, and of society. Out of the myriad possibilities that people are presented with at any given moment, the conscience calls on them to choose the right one, the most appropriate one. The immediate judgment of conscience is the admonition for right behavior that should be followed here and now. Obligation in conscience points out the inner nature of ethical demands, which derives from binding reality and which is imposed as an obligation. Moral life is based on the principle of the proper autonomy of the human person, the personal subject of his acts. The autonomy of practical reason means that people have in themselves the law that should govern their actions. The conscience is the ultimate criterion of obligation, and this conscience arises in consideration of the reality of things, in consideration of their values and anti-values. The ultimate criterion of a particular ethical action is reality, plus the collection of values and meanings as I apprehend them and as they impose themselves on my conscious perception. People sometimes interpret obligation in conscience as implying that one can disregard positive laws and not be compelled by binding reality, but this is a mistaken interpretation. Positive laws are usually made to highlight an obligation in conscience. Obligations that do not move the conscience are not humanizing norms. Freedom of conscience is people's right to conduct themselves according to their own way of thinking. Freedom of conscience is not a free pass to act arbitrarily. 5.3 Freedom. Only the freedom which submits to the truth leads the human person to his true good. The The good of the person is to be in the truth and to do the truth. John Paul II, VSN 84. Freedom arises from people's rational nature and consists of not being necessarily conditioned by external stimuli and being able to make their own determinations on the basis of individual preference. The exercise of freedom consists of doing what is right out of love for it, giving oneself fully to it under no pressure from anyone else. This implies that the possibility of doing wrong is the risk of being free. People develop on the basis of free options. Their decisions gradually shape the source of their desires. The most profound and important effect of freedom is the configuration of the human person. Freedom is the capacity that people have to give of themselves and to commit to themselves, to ideals, and to other people. This implies that the meaning of freedom is the possibility of undertaking a commitment, and the right of free people is to give themselves to whomever they have chosen. When people give themselves not to a person but to a cause, this cause is worthy only inasmuch as it is linked. Causes or institutions are not in and of themselves subjects of personal commitment because they cannot respond personally. Ideals are sublime to the extent that a commitment to them affords benefits to specific people. 5.3.1 Freedom in Process. Even when a decision is free, it is conditioned in terms of both each concrete situation and its own history. Not all of our options are free in the same measure. In human action, all kinds of determinations come into play: social, climatic, biological, and psychological, that to a great extent can limit our freedom. There may be cases of internal or external coercion that cancel it. In fact, people are more inclined not to be free than to be free, given the many dependencies they are born with, and given the fact that they often find it easier to surrender their freedom than to make use of it. Freedom, then, is something that has to be taught and learned. People are not born free. They become free. Even when people manage to be free, their freedom is conditioned, in the first place, by themselves, because decisions made in the present are not independent of those made in the past. This is why life consists at the same time of conditioned freedom and received nature. People are the authors who decide as well as the executors of their acts. The life of a person is a whole. Each of his acts carries the weight of the entire life. In his early years, all perspectives were open, and the number of possibilities was practically limitless. As we opt for certain preferences, we gradually shape our lives in a certain direction. Moreover, our virtues or vices incline us toward certain actions or to certain others. Virtues and vices constitute ways of proceeding that are imprinted on us. There are also habits that may have been voluntary at first, but that are not anymore. Thus, the field of free action narrows as life goes on. Our present freedom is conditioned by the history of its development. It is no longer possible to point life in a direction that was possible 10 years ago. The concrete situation rules out a good portion of possibilities and imposes a series of inescapable duties. The task of the ethical life is to make good decisions come naturally to us, so that doing the right thing becomes more and more agreeable and spontaneous. Our way of being, our habits, and our situations give a direction to our freedom without canceling it. Our freedom makes us capable of overcoming our given and acquired nature, our innate and acquired way of being, and thus transcends it. This is what enables us to go beyond our own conditioning factors. 5.3.2, Freedom for Commitment. People's lives develop through commitments. Together with the right to be free, people have the obligation to exercise their freedom responsibly. The call to freedom is also a call to responsibility. Freedom in and of itself, independently of the use that is made of it, of the nobility of heart or the cruelty involved, is not the supreme value. Freedom seen as the possibility of doing whatever I feel like is an empty concept. The meaning of freedom depends on its objective, i.e., what the person opts for. 5.33, Meaning or Purpose of Freedom. The objective of freedom is not just the choice of concrete options or the configuration of the person, which can be good or bad, but rather good itself, value and virtue, which is whatever makes people more human. The perfection of freedom consists of wanting what is right and identifying with it to such an extent that it becomes impossible to do what is wrong. Being able to do evil is not a value, but an imperfection of the will, not a strength, but a weakness. The possibility of doing the wrong thing is not freedom or perfection of freedom, but rather the risk of being free. With what is right, we have an essential and natural relationship. Toward what is wrong, we have a fundamental inclination as a defect, a shortcoming, an absence. When we tend toward evil, we do so as dupes. Error and evil do not build people up. They are always a stumbling, a kind of failure, and choosing them makes people less human. Another thing that freedom is not is indifference. In that case, the more neutral we became, the freer we would be. The essence of freedom is not the possibility of choosing what is wrong, but the fact of choosing objectively what is right, of choosing it willingly and consciously. A good education is not one that resorts to fear and guilt to ensure obedience. The transition from childhood to adulthood entails replacing externally imposed obligation with inner obligation freely recognized and assumed. We are called to be even freer than we have managed to make ourselves so far. The deepest link that people can forge through their free decision is the link they forge to other people. Only in interpersonal relationships do they find a response that corresponds to their dynamic freedom. This orientation points to the sense of the human vocation. People are free to communicate with others, but their freedom extends farther than the people they deal with directly. I am freer than what others are willing to accept or want me to be. In society, no one insists on my freedom or needs me to be free. On the contrary, other may be out to keep me down. And even though the good that I do may culminate in a link with others, my freedom only finds its fullest sense as a response to a transcendent call. Those who think that being free is doing whatever I feel like are getting it wrong, as are those who think that being free does not entail commitment or obligations or deciding autonomously what is right and what is wrong. 5.4 Responsibility. The word responsibility comes from the word response. It is a specifically personal attitude, because only the person can respond. Being responsible means responding in the face of reality, and also responding for the way of responding. It means assuming responsibility for the response. Conscience and freedom culminate in responsibility. This is the fruit of conscientious intellection and free action. We call it the ethical constituent, because it is the way people express themselves explicitly, and without it, there is no ethical action. Toward things, the response is only indirect. In its strictest sense, responsibility only exists toward people. Responsibility is possible inasmuch as people can account for themselves and their action, both to themselves and to others. The response does not necessarily have to be verbalized. It can be communicated by any appropriate and fitting reaction. Responsibility is a response for oneself and to oneself. Each person is, in the first place, responsible for what she makes of herself, and then for whatever depends on her. In practice, the responsibility that first becomes apparent is responsibility for an immediate action. Since people are social beings called to enrich and justify their actions before others, their actions can be subjected to both their own judgment and that of others. By taking responsibility for their way of being and acting, people enhance and strengthen the social fabric. Responsibility is the basis of people's capacity for dialogue. There is no dialogue when there is no possibility to respond. And for this same reason, only responsible people can engage in real dialogue. Only the person as responsible subject can be evaluated ethically. More than being responsible for a particular action, the important thing is to be a responsible person. Responsibility is the way of being of the finished person. 5.41 How to be responsible. Things done out of custom or habit or simple obedience do not create a sense of responsibility. Responsibility is assumed and developed by the conscious and free ordering of one's own actions. Like the exercise of freedom and the conscience, the exercise of responsibility benefits the person himself, first of all. And for this reason, it enters into a dynamic process. People are not born responsible. They become responsible. In this sense, the environment plays an extraordinarily important role in developing the sense of responsibility. This serves to underscore the importance of the social task of forming responsible people. Education for responsibility is achieved by gradually entrusting people with actions that evoke the response of a true subject. This, in turn, makes people more and more disposed to behave responsibly, and they get practice in measuring and discerning the scope and the consequences of their actions. Rewards and punishments can be helpful in the early stages of nurturing responsibility, but later they can interfere with the process. Genuinely responsible people take their greatest satisfaction and reward from doing the right thing, and at the same time, this way of acting confers the greatest dignity because it is motivated by the gratification and satisfaction of doing what is right, and not the expectation of a reward or the fear of punishment. 5.42, The scope of responsibility. The call to respond for one's own life brings with it the need to take care of the different areas that make up a human life. All the dimensions of the human person are included in the call to be responsible. Therefore, people need to address their family life, their political life, their economic activity, the way they care for the environment, etc. People live immersed in myriad responsibilities. They must respond to numerous demands placed on them by the world they live in. Sometimes, responsibility for immediate or urgent matters keeps people from being responsible for their own life. But when people choose certain options and decide on a certain orientation in accordance with what is fairest, they are properly assuming responsibility for their life. The scope of personal responsibility is limited. We can only respond for what we know, and we are aware of the fact that we must assume it freely. As people become more responsible, the scope of their responsibility expands. They can be co-responsible. They can share obligations with others. They are able to broaden the horizons of their ethical ideals, to extend their judgment beyond experience and human behavior. Parallel with this, they begin perceiving new responsibilities. The ethical sense grows more sensitive to new demands through the transformation of reality. The ideal of the common good is built on a society where everyone assumes responsibility for everyone else, in solidarity. Plus Christian reflection. Just as the citizen cannot know the emperor's will except through the governor, thus man cannot know God's will except through his own conscience. St. Thomas Aquinas, IQ 79A12. God speaks through our conscience, in the same way he speaks through our reason and our feelings. Thus, the conscience can be seen as a window to the transcendent in order to appraise one's own actions, either confirming them or rechanneling them. People's inner call is God's voice beckoning them to make better of themselves in the freedom and truth of their own being. It is a call to authenticity. People, as God has made them and loves them, are conscious, responsible, and free beings, and called to be more and more so. God wants to be recognized in freedom. Faith in God is a call to freedom, to responsibility, and to co-responsibility. The conscience is God's presence in man. Victor Hugo. The possibility of giving an answer to God, in words and with one's own life, is the foundation that makes faith possible. There would be neither faith nor communication with God if people were not able to give an answer. Summary. Studying this chapter leaves me with the following convictions. I am an ethical person on account of being conscious, free, and responsible. As a conscious being, I listen to the voice of my conscience by reflecting on what I do, what I ought to do, what I have done, or what I have failed to do. I should see to the edification of my own conscience by procuring the necessary information. As a person called to true freedom, I need to conquer it in order to commit myself to others, to what is right and what is true. I need to take responsibility for myself, for my decisions, for my actions and their consequences. This is what makes me an adult. Because I am free, I can communicate with others and with God and respond to them. Activities. Describe the way your conscience works in response to a certain problem, personal or professional, e.g. abuse of authority. With this same problem, describe the way you perceive values and alternatives you have. Also indicate what these values are. How do you make a judgment? How does the sense of obligation to do something arise in you? What do you feel responsible for and why? Detect the criteria or norms, feelings, and drives that your conscience clashes with. What is the root of this clash? What happens when you do not follow the call of your conscience? What makes you think you have made the right decision? In this same situation, what are you free to do and what aren't you free to do? In each case, identify what it is that limits your freedom. In what way is the weight of your life at stake in the decision you make? Which of your habits give you freedom and which take it away? How is your freedom compromised by this or that decision? Which of the responsibilities that you have taken on do you think make you freer? How do you think you could be more co-responsible in your family, in your social relationships, in your work? Make a description of the dynamic nature of freedom. A. Freedom is always oriented toward what is right. B. Freedom always entails responsibility on the part of the subject. C. Freedom is communication with others. D. Freedom is openness toward the other. E. Freedom ends in love. True or false? All education is a kind of taming, true, false. The human formation of personality is an assimilation of ideology without an objective grounding, true, false. Conscience is nothing more than the need for personal and collective justification, true, false. The approval of others is what makes value judgments right or wrong, true, false. The fundamental role of freedom consists of opting in life for a basic orientation, giving it a target or discovering it, and opting for a project. True, false. Freedom serves to free yourself from the values that others have tried to impose on you. True, false. If people were the way they were as children before receiving any education, they would be better. True, false. For the good of the person, it is better to live without obligations or to disavow them. True, false. Freedom is a way to commit ourselves more to truth, love, good, and people. True, false. Authority cannot be called on as the ultimate argument for assessing a certain behavior. True, false. A doctrine cannot be proposed as ethical or demand submission without rational arguments. Bibliography: Aristotle, Nicomachean Ethics, Book 2, UNAM, Mexico City, 1983. Classical version of the Anthropology and Metaphysics of Freedom. Contains profound and highly lucid contributions that still resound today. Aranguren, José Luis Alianza Ed, Mexico City, 1986. This book compiles the best of Western tradition and puts it in a critical dialogue with modern thought. Buber, Martin, ¿Qué es el hombre? Fondo de Cultura Económica, Mexico City, 1985. This work presents different visions of the human person in contemporary thought. Each proposal constitutes a different outlook on freedom. Coreth, Emmerich, ¿Qué es el hombre? Chapur 11, El Herder, Barcelona, 1966. This book sets forth a solid overview of philosophical anthropology. It brings together important input from current biology and anthropology and looks deeply at the meaning of self-fulfillment and self-development in the human person. Eccles, John, El Cerebro y la Mente, Chap. Stowen III, Ed Herder, Barcelona, 1986. The book examines the biological factors that play a role in human action. Very useful for understanding the role played by the relationship between the mind and the brain as a conditioning factor in human action. García de Alba, Juan Manuel, El Valor de tu Vida, Ediciones Iteso, Guadalajara, Hal, 1990. The book contains important reflections on the meaning of fundamental human experiences. Hefner, Gerd, Anthropologia Philosophica, Part 3, Ede Herder, Barcelona, 1982. This rigorous summary contains a metaphysical analysis of the notion of freedom in dialogue with contemporary thought. Hayek, Friedrich von, The Constitution of Freedom, Chicago University Press, 1987. A work that makes a thorough examination of the idea of freedom in modern liberalism. Useful for its discussion of the value of freedom of choice within the social and economic context. Heschel Abraham, The Insecurity of Freedom, Schocken Books, NY, 1975. Who is Man? Stanford University Press, California, 1973. In these books, the author examines the meaning of human freedom, its possibilities, and its risks. His style, reminiscent of the wisdom books, is an invitation to profound reflection on one's own action. Hortelano Antonio Moral Responsable, Edi, Sigma Salamanca, Sinosien. Problemas Actuales de Moral, Volume 1, Chap. Lord, Ed, Sigma Salamanca, 79. These books address the topics of conscience, freedom, and responsibility, systematically and from different perspectives, especially useful for integrating the results of modern sociology. Maritain Hack, Lecciones Fundamentales de Filosofía Moral, Club de Lectores Buenos Aires, 1966. Classic book on the Thomist notion of freedom and moral conscience. A clear and rigorous examination of the topic. Molman, Jürgen, El Hombre, Sígueme sa Ostentreis. The author reflects on the tasks that human beings today must take up and the risks they face. Ruiz de la Peña, Las Nuevas Antropologías, Salterrai, Santander, 1983. Imagen de Dios, Chapnol Quart, Salterrai, Santander. Systematic, up-to-date works. In dialogue with the results of human sciences, the author looks in-depth at the Christian understanding of the human person. Salman Howard, Ética y Progreso es desde Mexico City, New 68. In this book, the author makes a case for new positions regarding the principles of ethics in the light of the great social transformations of the last few decades. In particular, the author proposes a search for unity through worldwide justice, a concise book that puts forward some debatable points, e.g. his proposals about socialism. It nonetheless contains highly relevant and up-to-date ideas and intuitions. Vidal Marciano, Moral de Actitudes, Volume Part 66, Chap. 4th and Part 7 APS, Madrid, 1981. A complete work that analyzes the anthropological basis of ethical action by taking into account the contributions of social sciences and psychology. Sacramentum Mundi, Encyclopedia Teologica Herder, Barcelona, 1976. Important reference work that offers a clear and concise explanation of terms used in philosophical and theological anthropology. Subir y Xavier sobre el hombre, Chapter 5, Alianza Ed, Madrid, 1986. The author offers a profound analysis of a metaphysical nature. He focuses his analysis on the reality of the human person as subjected to different determining factors. Questions. What do we mean by ethical perception? The innate orientation that people have to do the right thing. What is conscience? The capacity that people have to know themselves, own themselves, and turn their gaze upon themselves. What does the ethical conscience consist of? The capacity to evaluate and judge one's own projects, attitudes, and actions. What relationship is there between the conscience and human beings themselves? The conscience is not a separate entity. It is the subject himself inasmuch as he knows, values, and judges himself. The conscience encompasses all the dimensions of the human person and refers back to a living unity, to the ego of the human being as a person. Why do we say that the conscience is dialectical? Because it makes people aware of the tension that exists between their being and their ought to be, between their being and their way of being. It reveals their identity as reality and project. It highlights their identity as a dynamic process that allows them to transcend themselves and in this way, to be more and more themselves. How can we have a well-educated conscience? By making an effort to proceed as authentically as possible in each situation, by gathering enough information about the dynamic nature of human and social structure, by engaging in dialogue with people who have experience and maturity, by continually discerning our own decisions and the values and anti-values that I can choose within a conflict situation. What are the dynamic processes that make up the person as an ethical being? Conscience, freedom, and responsibility. What is freedom? The capacity that people have to direct their own actions and their life in accordance with their decisions, to give of themselves and to commit to themselves, to their ideals, and to other people. Is freedom the basis of there being good and bad things? Freedom does not make things good or bad, but it does determine the person's way of being when choosing what is right or wrong. What is the meaning and the orientation of the human person's freedom? The choice of what is right. What is responsibility? It is the foundation of people's dialogic nature. It is a response from oneself to oneself, to others, to God. How do we come to be responsible people? By responding to what we know consciously and freely, without expecting a reward for it.